Well, let's see. It's Monday, December 5th, and it's snowing. Welcome to Maine. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We'll find out if it's snowing in New Hampshire. That's where our guest is from. Mike Anderson is an expert on a lot of things, social-emotional learning. And today, however, we're going to talk about homework, which can be social and emotional. I just got a word from my good friend Jessica in the industry, who hopefully I'll see at the ETIN conference on Thursday and Friday this week when I'm in New York, and her kid went through the hammers of hell. You can listen to this, Mike. I'll bring you on in a second, because he had to do a one-page essay on Santa Claus. Okay? Went through craziness. He's in, whatever, third grade, whatever. Hope he's not. I hope he's not in college. And I wrote her back and said that that was my doctoral thesis, a one-page essay on Santa Claus. But then again, I went to a bad school. Hey, welcome to the show. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We got a short week this week, just so you know. Today and tomorrow, Monday and Tuesday, we have shows. And Wednesday, I'm flying down to New York City for the SIIA conference, and we'll be back Monday with a full week shows. So listen to us tomorrow and today, and then we're off for the rest of the week. But all the archive shows are there. This show will be archived at education-talkradio.org, and it'll be tweeted out over at EduTalk Radio. Already did it a couple of times with a direct link, and I hope you take a minute and follow us. Okay, today's show is presented by my good friends over at Evo, Social and Emotional Learning. You can go over to apperson.com, then you'll see a big icon up there for Evo, Social Emotional. Just click right through on that, and you'll find out that it's a wonderful program, Evo, Social and Emotional Learning. Social Emotional platform gives insight to student emotional competence and resiliency and provides a framework for maximizing potential for kids, providing opportunity, which, by the way, is everything. You'll maximize the benefits of social and emotional learning and make a positive impact on students' lives and the social climate of the school with research-based tools. And hopefully all that post-election raucous in schools is winding down, but it is tough on some of the kids, as we all know, and it's important to improve attitudes and reduce emotional distress while enhancing the academics, decreasing negative behaviors, promoting social behaviors, and fostering resilience. So check it out. It's over at apperson.com. Just click on Evo, Social and Emotional Learning, a big tab at the top of the page, and you'll see all the wonderful things that this product can do, especially in this day and age. And hopefully everything's calming down, and hopefully none of that stuff happened in your school. Let me bring on Mike from New Hampshire. Mike, how you doing? Granite Head.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Happy to be back with you.
Always a pleasure, Michael. Indeed, it's good to hear your voice. I got to tell you, is it snowing down there in Dover, New Hampshire?
It is lightly snowing. The ground is just covered. We had kind of a little burst of snow about an hour or two ago, and it's supposed to snow lightly through the rest of the morning, so it's very nice.
Well, that's what's happening here. Exactly. As I told my friends, it's snowing. It's beautiful. Remember to ask me again in February.
That's right. By the time March hits, we're all done. But in December, it's fantastic.
In December, it's just great. We're going to talk about homework today. By the way, Mike's website, I love having Mike on the show, and Mike's website is leadinggreatlearning.com, and he tweets at Balanced Teacher. He is a balanced teacher and one hell of a good guy. Okay, homework. What's going on with homework? When I was a kid, when I was a teacher, we had it every day, and I know that's changed. In fact, Jessica in our conversations today was just telling me that, quote, she laughingly said, quote, homework is a dirty word. Is it a dirty word?
Yeah. If you want a one-word answer, yeah.
That people are all over the place right now. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. No, I'm only kidding. Right.
So happy now joining you, Larry. We'll talk next time.
It was really a pleasure, Mike. Thanks a million, and Merry Christmas. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so it is a dirty word. Why is it a dirty word? It used to be good.
Well, I'm not sure it ever used to be good, but it's probably worse now than it once was. And I think people are all over the place with homework right now. There are some schools that assign massive amounts of homework, some teachers that assign massive amounts of homework, some schools that are really moving away from it. I've seen at least five or six schools in the news just up in the Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine area in the last few months that have moved to no homework policies at elementary schools. So I think it's something that people are feeling a lot of confusion and angst about right now.
Wait a minute. You said elementary schools. Is this an elementary school challenge or is it a K-12 challenge?
It's absolutely a K-12 challenge.
Okay.
I think the negative impacts of homework are often more readily apparent at elementary school. And I think homework is sort of more of an accepted evil in the middle and high school levels. But there's absolutely room for improvement across the board, K-12.
You know, Mike, it's interesting. We talk about homework, but I talk to a lot of people. And I never thought of that until just now. That say learning is now a 24/7, 12-month-a-year, if I may, activity. You can learn as much at home as you can in school. You know, one helps the other, et cetera. Is that the reason why homework's in decline, or is it just that it's a bad thing?
Well, so, you know, it's easy to say homework's a bad thing. It's probably too simple an answer. There are some kinds of homework that are better or worse than others. I think it's pretty reasonable to say that it would be great if all kids, all elementary school kids, read a little bit every evening. You know, to say that all elementary school kids are going to read 15 or 20 or 30 minutes a day would be a great simple kind of homework that elementary schools could give. And in the upper grades, to assign a very small amount of review or practice work to kind of help solidify gains made during the school day, to help kids keep kind of general practice up, is great. The problem happens when the work becomes overwhelming because it's great in volume or because it's, interestingly enough, appropriately challenging, meaning that it's in what Vygotsky called kids' zone of proximal development. So it's work that's challenging enough that it's going to require support and coaching and hard work and effort, but not so challenging that it's going to be completely overwhelming. The problem is that in order to do appropriately challenging work, you need high energy, a good place to work, and you often need support and coaching, all things that are available during the school day. But once the work comes home, kids may or may not have a good environment to do really high-level work. And parents very often can't or don't know how to give appropriate coaching if the work is challenging at home. And so that's where things really get complicated. A few simple math problems, some practice reading, you know, those can be fine. But if kids are doing high-level projects or if they're supposed to do 35 algebra problems, what often happens is kids get overwhelmed. They're exhausted after a long day of school. They may or may not have a good place to work. And if the work is challenging, they're going to need support and help. And that's often what they can't get at home. And so that's where homework gets really damaging.
And I have to ask, you certainly know me, we've had dinner together, and yeah, I'm old. Let me put it that way. I'm young at heart, but I'm old. All right? But it was never like that, if I may, when I was a kid or when I was a teacher. And I understand that we have to deal with all kids. We're talking about all kids here, kids in poverty, kids from distressed homes. We're talking about everything. All right. But for the average kid, is it really that bad? What has changed? That's maybe what I'm driving at.
Yeah. So I think part of what's changed is that as a general rule, I think more.
Oh, by the way, my father was very helpful with my homework. My father he just simply said, do your goddamn homework. You're not going outside. That was the end of it.
And you probably didn't have massive amounts of it. So,
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got two children at home. One's in eighth grade and one's in ninth. And this is something, and you know, we live in a comfortable middle-class environment in a good school system.
Yes, you do.
The kids have got a stable home. They've got a good place to do work. But we have watched this since first grade. We've watched our kids struggle with different kinds of homework. Struggled with spelling words that were too hard. Struggled with an assignment that I'm sure from the teacher's perspective seemed simple because it's something they were doing in class and kids seemed to be able to do it okay there. And so they said, finish it at home. But after a long day of learning, kids are exhausted. And what made sense at home, by the time you get home, if you're 10 years old, you may or may not remember exactly how that was working in school. And then you get lost and frustrated and there's nobody there to help you. And even though both my wife and I are teachers, just because we're teachers doesn't mean that we can necessarily help our own kids with homework.
No, they may push back. And you know, now that you're saying that, I'm thinking back to math, which I always had trouble with. And elementary school was one thing because you had the same teacher all day. She could dwell on it. But you had 45 minutes of math every day when I was in junior high, let's say. Okay. And then I had a mess of other subjects all day long. I forget what we did in math. Now I'm stuck with 20 algebra problems, which or geometry or whatever it was. Which I didn't really get. But aren't we trying to foster resilience to make kids work for that? I realize I'm playing the devil's advocate here, Mike, because basically I agree with you, but it's just curious to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think one of the great myths of homework is that we're teaching kids responsibility, or we're teaching them a good, strong work ethic by loading them down with extra work after school. So first of all, I know of no research studies at all anywhere that show a direct causation between more homework and an increase in responsibility. Interestingly, the research that's out there on homework often tries to correlate it with achievement. And it's pretty consistent that achievement is not directly connected to homework.
Wow.
That when you look at studies of homework, in the primary grades, there's often a negative correlation. So the more homework you give, the lower kids' achievement gets. At the elementary level, there's very little correlation at all. More homework does not equal more learning. At the middle and high school, it slightly increases, but it's a correlation, not a causation. So what it means is that typically your achievement appears higher when you do more homework, but oftentimes that's measured by grades. And so, of course, kids are going to get better grades when they do their homework if their grade in part is determined by whether or not you bring in your homework. So
yeah,
it can look like achievements
yeah.
going up, but what it's really doing is measuring compliance. But back to the responsibility thing, I absolutely agree that we need to be teaching kids and helping them learn responsibility and resilience. And I know as a teacher that in order for me to teach anything, I've got to be there with the kids in order to coach them through it. And that assigning something and sending it home means that as the teacher, I'm now no longer there to help or support or coach that kid in the skill I want them to work on. So if responsibility and resilience is something that I think is really important as a teacher, and I want my students to learn that, I need to make sure that I'm assigning things in class that allow them to practice that skill when I'm there so that I can support and help them learn that skill. To send it home would be like a football coach teaching a new play to kids and saying, go practice it on your own. And then the kids, you know, they're
Good
supposed
point.
To practice the skill without the coach there.
Good. Well, and let me ask you this. What about reading ahead? So, or flipped learning, as we call it, you know, where the teacher is online and the kids look at it at night and then the teacher goes over it during the next day. Is that homework?
It is homework. And I understand the premise behind it. And I think that people are having varying degrees of success with it. I'll tell you what I find really challenging about it. So that just in case people who are listening don't know what the flipped classroom is, and I know it's probably something many people have heard of, the basic idea is that kids will read something at home, or they'll maybe watch an online lecture, so that they're doing the content intake at home, which means that once they get to school, they have more time for the better, richer, deeper hands-on learning and more collaborative project work. That's the basic idea, so that the teacher's not having to spend as much time doing direct instruction in lecture, or kids aren't reading as much in school. They're doing that at home, and then they're ready for the good stuff at school. In theory, it's a great idea. The challenge is for kids who don't have the ability to do that well at home, whether maybe they don't have a quiet environment where they can read. Maybe they've lost their power. You know, their electricity's been turned off,
and now it's
really hard to watch that video online. The very kids who most need a really good, supportive learning environment, if they can't do that work at home, now they get to school and they're automatically behind. And so when we rely on homework as the basis for teaching, the kids who can't do their homework at home don't have a shot. And I have a real problem with that, because that's a case of, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. The kids who are already set up to be successful with schoolwork can do it, and the kids who aren't fall further behind. And I find that real challenging.
Have you written a book on this? I know
I've
you write
books.
I've got
a book map. Yeah, I've got a book map on my wall right now called Kicking the Homework Habit. And I'd love to – I'm thinking about writing a book about helping schools get off of the homework habit if they'd like to, or helping teachers move away from homework if they'd like to. There are a couple of really good books already out there that lay out why homework is such a bad thing. And mm-hmm. I don't think there's any real use in me writing another book about that.
Okay.
One of them is The Homework Myth by Alfie Kohn, which I highly recommend. There's another one called The Case Against Homework by Sarah Bennett and Nancy Kalish. Those are both great books that really kind of lay out the case for why homework is such bad practice or can lead to bad practice. I would love to write a book that helps people move away from it if they want to. So I'm playing around with that right now.
Hmm. Good idea. You wrote me something. You called it, and I don't know what it is. So help me out here. The Homework Doom Loop, which sounds like a science fiction movie. The Homework Doom Loop. It sounds like something on your grade level of Call of Duty on one of the video games. You get the Homework Doom Loop, and you're destroyed. What is that?
Yeah, so I actually wrote a blog post called Math Teachers Avoid the Homework Doom Loop. So if people want to check that out, they can go to my website and look at my blog. So the homework
LeadingGreatLearning.com. LeadingGreatLearning.com. Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
You're
welcome. The homework doom loop happens when I wrote the blog post specifically for math teachers, but it can happen in other subjects as well. I think it just happens more often in math. So this is a doom loop where the kids get home and they try and do their homework and they struggle with it. And so it creates a lot of stress. They don't do very well because they don't totally understand how to do the homework. So they get back to school the next day and the teacher says, okay, let's take a few minutes and go over the homework. The kids struggled. And so going over the homework ends up eating up almost all of the class period. So by the time they finished going over and correcting the homework, there's almost no time left to teach a lesson. So the teacher says, okay, let me just show you what the next assignment is. We'll do a couple of practice problems, and now go home and do the homework. And now, because the kids haven't had good instruction, there's no way they're going to be able to do that homework well. So they're going to struggle with the homework. They're going to come back in. And before you know it, you're caught in this loop as a teacher, where instead of teaching good lessons and having kids practice work in school, you're not teaching good lessons because you don't have time, because you spent all this time going over the homework, and the kids aren't being set up for success with the homework because they didn't get good teaching.
Right. Is there any homework that's good? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say this is it's a loop that's easy to fall into, and once you're into it, it can be hard to break out of it. And so in that blog post, I do give a couple suggestions for kind of breaking the cycle.
Is it like smoking?
So
you got to break it gently.
Kind of good homework?
I have to ask this for the teacher. Seriously, like smoking, they say, you know, the Chantix, that pill. You can smoke for the first week you're on it or something. Okay, so you can break away gently as your need is reduced. Are teachers caught in a habit of homework? Are they?
I think they are. And I think schools are stuck in the habit of homework. And a lot of teachers are uncomfortable with homework and don't like to give it, don't think it's super valuable, but they feel pressure either from their colleagues or from the school itself or from parents who think that homework's a good thing. And so they assign homework because they think they're supposed to. Many teachers are caught in the habit of homework because there's just so much to do. Teachers are overwhelmed with so much work they're trying to accomplish. And many teachers who I talk to say, you know, I have to send some of it home, otherwise we'll never get through everything. And so as a teacher, I myself moved away from homework. And it did require me to do a little bit less. But in the end, I was okay with that because I decided I was going to do a few things, I was going to do less content, but in more depth and better, as opposed
Good.
To just trying to cram in tons of extra work in kind of a shallow way.
Yeah, this is an interesting topic, and I would imagine it is pretty hard to deal with this. But there's another problem there, parents. The last 12,000 years, parents have said, what's for homework? And the kid says, I don't have any homework. And the mother goes, right, and she checks the assignment book. You know the story. And now parents
mm-hmm.
can log on to see what was given. Oh, okay. Parents like to see homework. Okay. And I, you know, they're not, parents aren't educators, but they are parents. They know their kids, but they like to see homework. So where does it stand with parents?
Yeah, parents, just like teachers, are kind of all over the place. I've talked to many parents who would love to see less homework because they see how much stress it causes at home. It can ruin many a family evening or weekend or even vacation when kids are given
like
homework.
Like the one-day essay on Santa Claus.
On Santa Claus. There are just so many things that I want to say about that. Yeah, oh my
That's
gosh.
My doctoral thesis. I would have sent it to him if he had told me. Okay, but it did cause a lot of stress. Jess's kid really had some stress cause of it for whatever reason.
Right.
It's funny.
So some parents
not
some
stress,
parents
but Santa Claus
would love. Yeah. Some parents would love to see less homework. Many parents think that homework is a good thing, and it makes sense, right? That we would want to see more work because more must be better. Well, the research doesn't bear that out. It's not clear that more work equals better learning. And I think also a lot of parents see it as comforting. You know, this is what school is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so somehow if we're not giving homework, then maybe that means their kid is missing out and they don't want that. Yeah. I mean, I think it's important to recognize that teachers and parents, we all have the best intentions and we all want what's best for kids. And so in order to move away from homework or to not ditch homework altogether, but change what it looks like, you know, make it so that it's less intrusive, more manageable for kids and parents, we're going to have to spend some time helping parents understand why the shift is beneficial for kids. And I think that's something that would really help a lot of parents better understand what's going on with homework and could then be more supportive of a shift or change when it happens. So it's interesting you say that about parents, because I just got an email from a principal out in Durango, Colorado, who I met with last April, and we were talking about this. He actually they at their school have moved away from traditional homework this year, and he just surveyed parents to ask them, how's it going? You want to hear a couple of the numbers?
Absolutely.
All right, so one of the questions he asked was, due to the change in homework practice, my child seems to enjoy school, more,
boom, boom.
About the same, less, or not sure. 45% of the parents said more, 48% of the parents said about the same. 1% said less, 6 said not sure. I thought that was pretty interesting.
It is
another one, due to the change.
Wait a minute, Mike, what's that mean? Does that mean that the homework doesn't matter? Is that what it means?
What do you mean? Perspective or just in general?
Well, from a parent perspective, okay, who is looking at their child and the way they look at school, okay?
Yeah.
And
well, so for that particular question,
yeah,
what it means is that it doesn't seem to be having any negative impact on whether or not kids enjoy school. In fact, it seems to have a positive impact.
Right.
The next question was also interesting. Due to the change in homework practices, time after school with our child feels, and it was either more relaxed, about the same, more intense, or not sure. 79% said more relaxed and 18% said about the same. Only 5%
there were no negatives.
Said more intense or not sure. Right.
Wow. That is interesting. That is interesting. What school was it? Was it in high school, elementary? What was it?
This is an elementary school.
Okay.
Yep.
In Durango, Colorado.
So the rest of the questions were all very similar. You know, that as a general rule, parents are really supportive of this change. And I know that the school is working at doing this thoughtfully, and they're really engaging parents in a dialogue. So I think when parents are informed about the change and understand why it's happening and are given some alternatives, that's another important thing. You know, to just sort of yank homework away and say we're not doing homework at all could really make parents feel uncomfortable. But if we say the homework is to read, the homework is to get outside and play so you're ready for a good day of school tomorrow. Homework is to make sure you're getting a good night's sleep so you're ready for an intense day of learning the next day. To even provide resources and materials for kids and families if you want to extend the learning. You know, here's what we're learning in science, and here are some things you might do if you want to continue to learn on your own at home.
Wow, that's
great.
So
to provide some options and alternatives is a way that we can also make this less scary and also take some of the burden off of homework for both kids and parents and teachers.
Yeah, and maybe we've forgotten, that school and anything with it is supposed to be about learning, not just work for the sake of work. All right. And what you just said is really interesting, that if we can convince a kid to spend their time kind of on their own to do more, all right, about what they have learned in school without a lot of pressure, all right, you know, water seeks its own level. Kids will do that. And I remember doing that in science. I remember doing it in science.
And interestingly, if you assign a task, it now feels like work because you have to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
If you're invited to learn more on your own, you're actually more likely to join in with that learning with, you know, enthusiasm. And it's a great point where you just made the distinction between learning and work. I think oftentimes homework that's assigned is really focused more about just doing work.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to see people get really grumpy about doing work that feels meaningless? You assign teachers what they consider a tedious task outside of contract hours.
Yeah, bingo. Well said.
That's something that I would love to push a staff on that's really feeling like homework
you
is
should.
Time well spent, is to ask the staff how many hours a night outside of contract hours should you be required to work?
Exactly.
Well,
the
we
key
all
word
teachers.
There is required. The key word
required.
There is required. Right?
That's
most teachers,
right,
most teachers, and
teachers
I'm a classic example of that. We get like 2,000 downloads a day of people who listen to our shows, but we're not forcing anybody
right.
to do it. It isn't required. But they're listening,
that's
and they
right.
do other stuff, like with my friends at EdWeb and all that sort of thing. Okay? Teachers do this anyway because nobody's requiring them to do it. Okay? You require
right.
it, and
the
boom,
teachers
it's
have to work.
You know, you're exactly right, Mike. You know, sometimes we forget, okay, that the kids are people just like us and have the same reactions to things. Okay? And we're getting revenge by giving them homework because our teachers gave us homework, but in reality, it's probably totally crazy. You know, I have to ask you something, Mike. Okay, I don't know if you know this or if anybody knows this. What's the history of homework? When did it, who got this brilliant idea? When did it become embedded stone in education?
I am not an expert in the history of homework, but in the beginning of Alfie Kohn's book, The Homework Myth, he actually digs into that a little bit. And I don't remember the whole story, but I know that he talks about advocacy groups pushing back against homework back in like the late 1800s or early 1900s.
Wow.
You know, saying that kids need to get outside and have fresh air and sunshine in order to be healthy. So
I thought you were going to say so the kids go to work sifting coal in the coal mines. They'd have more time to do
yeah,
that.
Well, that's a whole other story.
That's another story.
But there's a long, long history of homework in this country. And there has been this sort of ebb and flow, where in certain generations, it's kids tend to get a lot more than in others. And I think right now I'm hoping that we're moving away from this peak that we've been seeing where, you know, it's really typical for middle and high school kids to be spending 3 or more hours of homework a night.
Really?
I
That's
have talked
typical?
To parents who have said that at their child, and these are oftentimes kids who are also doing sports and other after-school activities.
Right.
Very often high school kids are doing homework until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning and then getting up at 5:30 or 6 to go to school. And we know adolescents need 9.5 or 10 hours of sleep to be really high functioning.
That's right.
And
that's right.
You know, so you think kids get to school and they're exhausted, so it's hard to learn. And so it's like the homework ends up taking precedence over having awake, alert kids in school who are ready to learn. It's crazy.
Maybe that's the homework doom loop, okay? Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is sort of that broader doom loop of how we're all caught up in the cycle of we think that more work must be better. And, you know, I feel like we're raising the next generation of workaholics by training kids to put in a hard day's work
actually,
and
we're
then
probably
go home
not.
And think they got to do 3 more hours.
Yeah, actually, we're probably not. It's probably going to turn them off to it. You know, I have one last question, Mike, and this is interesting. As much homework as I gave when I was a teacher, I hated grading it. Just more work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And, you know, while teachers may, or educators, I'll say, may fight for the continuation of homework, it really is a pain in the tuchus. All right? So how are teachers reacting to this change? I would imagine, I would hope they're, as it comes down through the ranks, I would hope that it they're reacting positively to less homework. It's less work for them, quite frankly. And it's not doing that much to begin with.
Yeah, I've seen mixed results. When I'm consulting in schools and talk with teachers about reconsidering homework practices, very often what I see is elementary school teachers rise up and cheer. When I'll say something like, you know, if I could wave my magic wand, I'd just make homework disappear altogether. That'll evoke a standing ovation.
Yay,
in middle,
Mike.
In middle and high schools, it's less so, in part because the perceived demands of academic content are so much higher there that oftentimes teachers can't see any way around assigning a lot of work outside of class time. And so what I often see when I say something like that in middle and high school groups is a look of apprehension or confusion. It's so a part of the fabric of schools, especially in the upper grades, that it's hard to envision what it would look like to greatly reduce it. But I think that our kids deserve a shake at finding out about it.
Well, obviously it's working in some places. Mike, we got to go. This was great. As always, my friend, you'll come back on in 2017, won't you?
Sounds good to me.
Always sounds good to me. Everything else good? You
Fantastic.
Get all your Christmas shopping done?
Haven't even started.
Well, it's snowing. It's a good day to go do it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And Mike,
now
just tell everybody also the name of your latest book, which I should have brought in here, but I forgot it, so people know.
Sure. My latest book was Learning to Choose, Choosing to Learn, The Key to Student Motivation and Achievement. And it's all about giving kids more choice. And actually, that is a strategy that can help homework be more effective, is offering kids some simple choice about homework.
That's what we said before. You don't require it. You make it a choice. And kids are going to pick they're going to pick the assignments they like from the classes and subjects they like. It moves them in their own personalized learning direction. I'm full of cliches today, but that's actually true.
Well, or even if we don't necessarily have to give kids a choice about whether or not to do homework. I mean, that could be okay too. But let's say I'm a math teacher and I know that I've got kids in a variety of places with the work that we're doing. I might give a homework assignment that's got 20 problems on it, all of a different, you know, sort of levels of complexity, and say to the students, everybody choose 4 or 5 from the page to practice tonight. Instead of trying to do all 20, both the easy, the middle, and the hard ones, we can let the kids choose the ones that feel appropriately challenging, the ones that they can handle. 5 problems instead of 20 feels a lot more respectful, and then kids are choosing something that they can be successful with.
I love it. That's just great. Mike Anderson, thank you, buddy. You have a great holiday. We'll talk soon, and we'll get you scheduled for 2017.
Sounds good, Larry. Have a good trip later this week.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Sounds good. Bye.
Mike Anderson, everybody. He tweets it at Balanced Teacher. He knows his stuff. I really like having Mike on the show. He tweets it at Balanced Teacher, and it's leadinggreatlearning.com. His books are good, and he's one hell of a good guy. Okay, I got to tell you that right off the bat. He knows his stuff. Thank you, Evo Social Emotional Learning, which you can learn more about at apperson.com, and then click on the Evo Social and Emotional Learning icon there, and this is really good stuff. And it's really kind of all we're talking about here. You don't want kids to feel frustrated, et cetera, et cetera. It's good stuff. So check it out. And the social emotional learning is a hot subject these days throughout schools. Okay, and it's important we learn everything we can about it. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org and tweet it out once again with a direct link over at EduTalk Radio. We hope you follow us over there. We got another show today at 10:30. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. And if anybody has any ideas on that one-page essay on Santa, send them in. EduTalkLarry@gmail.com.